Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Iowa City Foreign Relations Council's program featuring guest speaker Shu Wan. Thanks to him and to everyone who has joined us online today. My name is Iyad Saeed. I am an ICFRC board member and co-chair of the program committee, as well as your host for today's program. ICFRC wants to acknowledge and thank its annual donors, members, sponsors, and partners for their support. This list includes the Iowa Arts Council through the Iowa Department of Cultural Affairs, Humanities Iowa and the National Endowment for the Humanities, the University of Iowa's International Program, Honors Program, and Public Policy Center, the Stanley UI Foundation Support Organization, Midwest One Bank, Texas Plus, and City Channel 4 for providing online access to ICFRC's programs, along with the UI Library Archives. ICFRC has adopted the Native American Land Acknowledgement prepared for the City of Iowa City's Ad Hoc Truth and Reconciliation Commission and Human Rights Commission. ICFRC recognizes that our home community of Iowa City now occupies the homelands of Native American nations to whom we owe our commitment and dedication. The full text of ICFRC's acknowledgement is on its website at icfrc.org. As we get started, I would like to cover some Zoom etiquette tips. This is the time to make sure you know where your video and audio mute and unmute buttons are located. You are already muted, so we ask you to please keep your audio turned off for the duration of the presentation so you do not interrupt our speaker. If you want to keep your video on, that's great, but we ask that you do your best to not use any distraction movement or distracting movements or behaviors. Following our speaker's presentation at about 12:45 p.m., we will have a 15-minute Q&A. You will be able to submit your questions via the chat function. At that time, if you have not done so, we invite you to turn on your video, but please keep your audio muted to avoid any background noise. I would now like to introduce Shu Wan. Shu Wan is currently matriculated as a doctoral student in history at the University of Buffalo. He also earned his MA in history and MLIS degree from the University of Iowa. Welcome back. His research focuses on the transnational history between China and the United States since the late 19th century. He currently serves on the editorial team of Digital Humanities Quarterly and Nursing Clio and works as a host in the Disability Studies channel of New Books Network. Please join me in welcoming Shu Wan, who will talk about We Were Ever Here, Chinese Exchange Students in Iowa between 1909 and 1937.
Hi, hello everyone, this is Shu Wan. I'm happy to deliver my speech to talk about my research about the past experience, the history of a Chinese exchange student in Iowa, around 100 years ago. So before talking about research, I may briefly introduce the background of my research. Why I took interest in this topic and subject a few years ago. As you may hear, a few minutes ago, according to introduction, I am a PhD student in history at the University at Buffalo in New York now, but I stayed in Iowa a few years ago for a while and work as a master student in history there. So at that time when I was in Iowa, I noticed the prominently cultural diversity of the campus. We have a lot of, even now I want to say, we still have a lot of Chinese students, we still have a lot of East Asian students. So as an international student come to Iowa a few years ago, that's a question come to my head. When was the first time Chinese student come to Iowa? Because I won't say Iowa, different from California or New York. Iowa is, throughout its history, Iowa has never been famous for the significant presence of Chinese student or Chinese population. But why we have so many Chinese students and when was the first time Chinese student come to Iowa? So this question motivated me to do this research. So the first thing I want to answer the question, when was the first time Chinese student come to Iowa? Here's the earliest records of Chinese students in Iowa. So here's a document composed by a person whose name is John Fryer, and he was a famous American missionary in China, and his Chinese name at that time was Fulanya. And while he was a missionary, but he also worked for the Bureau of Education in the U.S. at that time, and he compiled and composed a report called Admission of Chinese Student to American College. So in that book, it's the first record of a Chinese student in Iowa. It say, okay, in State University of Iowa, there's no Chinese student in recent years, but in Iowa Western University, in Mount Pleasant, and the Iowa College of Agricultural and Mechanical Arts, there were some Chinese students. So that document, that report was the first, documentation of a Chinese student presence in Iowa. So at least at that time, we had some Chinese students come to Iowa. So while I want to say following this, foreigners, a significant number of Chinese students were enrolled in higher educational institutions in Iowa. Between 1909 and 1933, a large number of Chinese students sailed to the United States to study in Iowa. So, however, there's a question, it's a very tricky question, that when I do this research, I found that most historians of higher education, historians of China, U.S. relations, they rarely talk about the presence of Chinese students in Iowa. So here's two examples. The two books, one is called Seeking Modernity in China's name, composed by historian Wei Li Ye. Another one is called Patriot of Traitors, composed by historian Stacy Baylor. The two books, I won't say they are the most important book about Chinese early history of Chinese exchange students in the United States in the early 20th century, in the late 9th century and early 20th century. But in the two books, they don't mention Chinese student in Iowa at all. But even you can see, look at the book cover, okay, maybe, I don't know what's that, maybe, but we can recognize Yale, we can look at maybe Princeton, Harvard, Cornell, no Iowa, nothing in the Midwest. So I would say Iowa, as I mentioned, Iowa has been outside of the horizon of history of higher education in the United States. In terms of Chinese persons or Chinese students in Iowa, it has been overlooked by those historians for a long time. So my research just tried to say, okay, while you overlook the significant presence of Chinese in Iowa, but I want to do something. I want to contribute my research to filling the gap, filling the knowledge gap, a research gap. So my presentation today will have mainly consist of two sessions. The first session is I want to talk about how Chinese students introduced Chinese food, culture, and news to Iowa in the early 20th century. The second part, I will talk about how some student and youth organizations facilitating Chinese students' introduction of food, culture, and news to Iowa. So here, let's talk about, as I mentioned, following the two Chinese student report, Chinese student presence in Iowa recorded in John Fair's documents, there are increased number of Chinese students come to Iowa in the 1910s and 1920s. Here, I just want to say, in the early 1920s, China had the largest presentation of 15 students, including four Chinese student women at University of Iowa. Meanwhile, they also become the largest foreign student population at the Cornell College, the private college in Iowa. So here is a newspaper article come from Daily Iowan, historical Daily Iowan, is just say, okay, we have large number of Chinese students at that time in the 1920s. So, but before talking about their experience, let's talk about, I want to say, the foodway or culinary landscape of Chinese food or country cuisine in Midwest. I want to say, when those Chinese students, as I mentioned, there's lots of Chinese students come to Iowa in the 1920s, they encounter the issue of food. So as what I say here, when studying abroad in Iowa, Chinese students had to face a set of challenges in a strange land, the first being a shortage of Chinese cuisine there. As a result of migration of Chinese labor in the USA since the mid-19th century, Chinese restaurants had scattered to most large cities or big cities across the United States, such as Chicago. So this one, according to a historian, Huping Ling, a large Chinese urban center in the Midwest, Chicago experienced expansion of in a number of Chinese chop suey houses in the 1910s as the trend spread across the country. While there's many Chinese restaurants in Chicago in the early 20th century, but there were very few Chinese restaurants in Iowa at that time. Well, I won't say now, maybe in our city, we have many options for Chinese foods, but at that time, very few options. I would say, as what I say here, however, this trend only partially reached Iowa. Reviewing newspaper between the 1910s and 1930s, I only found a single Chinese restaurant mentioned in the press. The name of the restaurant called Mandarin Inn is located in Cedar Rapids, which began business and recruited waitress and dishwashers in the 1920s. So that's the first, I would say, according to my research, that's the first record of Chinese restaurant in Iowa. Its name is Mandarin Inn in Cedar Rapids. However, the scarcity of ethnic restaurants, along with the layer tiring of American food, provoked Chinese students' eagerness to learn to cook for themselves. So according to a newspaper article in 1929, Chinese students were reported to have a low regard for the palatability of American cooking and to take time at the president in the kitchen and turning out delicates which he had enjoyed at home. So they had to cook for themselves. So they brought, in other words, they tried to brew Chinese food just the first time initially just to feed themselves. I mean, in the case of Chinese students. But beyond the cooking for themselves, those Chinese students also tried to take advantage of the ethnic or even the exotic food to foment social networking with the local community in Iowa. In 1921, the Chinese Student Club at the University of Iowa served as the honorary member of friends consisting of native faculty with Chinese cuisine. Through presenting their cuisine, Chinese students show their appreciation of their domestic community's hospitality. So they try to serve their friends with Chinese food, and they know one thing is because, oh, there's a very few Chinese food there. It's so interesting. So it's a new thing. They watch, okay, let's try Chinese food. You may never taste this one, but it's a good thing. And we want to express our appreciation and gratitude to you support of us. So beyond just expressing their gratitude to their friend, their faculty member in the college, the Chinese students also utilize their food in celebrating their National Day. So the celebration of National Day was an extraordinary critical observance for Chinese students' social life in Iowa. To attract the local community's attention to the special day, it's the day is 10th October, October 10th, Chinese students serve their domestic friends Chinese meal as early as 1919. Chinese students, there's some name, Xiu Wang, Janet Ho, Louis C, and Tong Wei Liu, they arrange a party to celebrate the National Day in Cedar Rapids. And they were in the Cornell College, during which time Chinese cakes were served. So it's mentioned in the newspaper, the Chinese cakes were served. By treating a local community to their own ethnic cuisine, Chinese students disseminated the taste of Chinese food among their white neighbors who each had a minimal experience with exotic food, Chinese food here, I mean. Beyond celebrating the National Day, the special day with the local community member, Chinese students also serving food for raising funds. So one, why? Because I want to say in the early 20th century, China was in a continuing political and social crisis. Ordinary Chinese people experienced a number of hardships in the early 20th century. As they come under the menace of natural disasters, in particular, great famine in North China between 1920 and 1921, China experienced an inclemente drought. Consequently, many millions faced starvation in the winter ahead. Without exception, Chinese students in Iowa also took active part in helping the local community recognize the exhibition of film in China. So you can see the picture. A lot of Chinese people was in plight, was in starvation like China because of natural disasters, especially in the year between 1920 and 1921. So what they want to do is that to serve in Chinese, first thing they want is raising fund and for the charitable purpose. So we can see here in 1921, Cornell student William Tan talked on the famine that is now ravaging Northern China at a Union Congregational Church in Waterloo. In addition to disseminating news of the disaster, Chinese students also engaged in raising funds in the local community to support the lives of their countrymen in need. Taking UI as an example, its Chinese students successfully raised over $800 for famine relief in China in 1921. So to promote the efficiency of their fundraising activity, Chinese students served local community with Chinese cuisine to attract attention again and express their appreciation for their donation. As early as 1920, Chinese students in our city began to serve a local community with tea and Chinese cake, again, here Chinese food, for the purpose of raising funds for relief of famine sufferers in China. 2 years later, the Chinese Students Club at Grinnell College, the private college, also served local attendance with chop suey and chow mein. You may know chop suey is so popular. It's typical Chinese food, very popular in North States, in a charity banquet for the purpose of fundraising. So serving exotic and ethnic food cuisine, Chinese students succeed in raising sympathy and receiving financial support from Iowa's local community, and they send money back to those Chinese people in need in their home country. So besides serving the food, another important component of Chinese people's campus life is giving speech to the public. So I want to say, English was not their first language, Chinese students established a reputation for proficiency in rhetorical skills. They were well known for participating in contests with domestic student English in the 1910s. So in 1916, Chinese student at Iowa State College, the Chinese name is P.S. Chang. Well, it's similar to P.F. Chang, but the restaurant, but they're totally different thing. The P.S. Chang, he was awarded with distinction of being the first Chinese student to represent the college on a debate team. So according to a local newspaper's commentary, he spoke better English more forcefully than many American candidates for president on the team. So it's very unbelievable. This guy, Chinese guy, his English, he even spoke English maybe a certain extent much better than his American peers. But that's really true. So in terms of the topic, the selection of topic in their public speech, they always talk about Chinese political news, especially the exacerbation of Sino-Japanese relation in the early 20th century. So Chinese students a lot of time in Iowa, they expressed their eagerness to discuss political issues. As seen in an American editorial commentary in the local newspaper, The Chinese students also take much more interest in the politics of their country than we do in ours. Or in those Chinese students' own testimony, any place, anytime, when five Chinese students are together, we found them talking about Chinese politics. So here's the original document, this newspaper article. So this guy, James Ding, he said, well, as I mentioned, he said, oh, Chinese people just want to talk about politics every time. And then he also said, it's very tricky, I would say. He said, if five American students get together, they talk about girls. Okay, go back to the presentation. So beyond chatting about political news within their own cohorts, Chinese students actively informed local audience of China's national crisis in the 1930s. So I want to say, after you may know, like for US, when we talk about, the beginning of the origin of the World II, always people say, okay, it's the originated in Hitler and Nazi Germany's invasion of Poland. But from my perspective, Chinese history, as a Chinese person, as a Chinese national, I may trace the origin of World War II back to Japan's invasion of China in 1931 and occupation of Manchuria at that time. So after the Macedon incident here means that in 1931, Japan invaded China and occupied the whole Manchuria. So after the incident, Japan seized Manchuria in northeast China, the League of Nations investigation and the intervention resulted in Japan's withdrawal from the international organization. So Japan feel where this don't care about the League of Nations opinion. Reacting to exacerbated national crisis, Chinese students attempt to alarm Iowa about Japan's threat to world peace. At the first Lutheran church in our city, a Chinese student alerted his local audience that the aggression of Japan unless the world powers intervene will mean eventual dominance nation of Japan in Manchuria. In the same year, another Chinese student named C.H. Wang restated Japan as an extremely nationalist nation, as an imperialist, as France under Napoleon or Germany under Kaiser Wilhelm with the design of eventually dominating entire Asia. In light of the prevalent sentiment of exceptionalism and isolationism held among American society before the Pearl Harbor attack in 1941, Chinese students actually interesting in Iowa, they feel they had a duty to at once alarm with their local community so they may become aware of its menace. So I want to just say, when they gave the speech, Japanese navies attacked on Pearl Harbor didn't happen. By that time, the Chinese people, Chinese students in Iowa just say, okay, all my American friends, you may think, okay, what happened in Asia now is just like one Asian country attacked or invade another Asian country, invade another Asian country. But I want to tell you, it's not just about Asia, it's about the world peace. Next step Japan may take will be invaded US. But we know that's true, that's totally true. So here's my summary, some brief summary of my first session. So serving Chinese cuisine and delivering speech to a public audience in Iowa, Chinese students successfully bridged the gap between their home and host countries across the Pacific. Of particular note is that Chinese students didn't conduct their studies individually, but with assistance of student organizations, such as Chinese Student Club and Aliens at different college. So my next session will talk about the student organization. So I want to say, according to my research, I can recognize at least three types of student organization played a very important role in facilitating Chinese students' social networking and the arrangement for social activities. The three organizations, they were Chinese Students, Aliens, and the Clubs, the Y organization, YMCA, YWCA, and the Cosmopolitan Club. So let's talk about Chinese Students and Aliens. So Chinese student aliens sometimes call Chinese students in the club, but I would say the difference is that Chinese student aliens, you could say aliens, it's like aliens of a different club. It's like headquarters of Chinese students organization across the United States. And its local chapter in different colleges is just called Chinese students chapters. So As the only nationwide student organization, predominantly consists of Chinese students in the early 20th century, the Chinese student alliance play an important role in supporting its members' activity. According to Wei Liye, you may remember her book is one of the most important book about Chinese student. Exchange student in the United States in the early 20th century. So according to Dr. Ye, its predecessor organization was founded in 1902, was the largest and the most elaborately organized, and for a while the most influential. The All Aliens first chapter in Iowa is established in our city, in University of Iowa, in 1916. Following its footsteps, the Chinese Student Club at Iowa State College in Ames had its inaugural date in 1919, which shaped the award to the college's largest international student organization with 25 members in 1924. So here's like the page in the yearbook. So you can see here the picture of the Chinese student organization. Here's like introduction. You say, okay, it's the largest one with like 25 members. So one thing is that arms-based club, was well known for raising funds in support of the Chinese student whose name Tao Chang's funeral. So starting about in the exclusion era American society, Chinese students were helpless when encountering unfortunate occurrences. For example, in 1922, the student Tao died in Iowa's city hospital, suddenly stricken while exercising at the tennis. However, his family in China was not able to afford the cost of a funeral in the United States. Concerned with Tao's posthumous situation, the organization Chinese Student Club in Arms successfully raised $114 among its members to defray the funeral expenses. So providing philanthropic services to Chinese students. This Chinese student club strengthened the connection between Chinese students of different backgrounds and regional belonging together. So why I say here, I want to emphasize, okay, while you say, oh, they are all Chinese students, but you know, China is such a large country. It's similar to the United States. We have some Chinese students come from East part of China, West part of China, Southern part of China. When come to US, they were organized, while they come different part of China, organized under the Chinese student organization and help each other. So in this sense, the organization is, we can say it's like a mutual aid organization. At least it's taken the mutual aid function on that time, Chinese Students Club. But beside the, providing mutual aid or philanthropic services to Chinese students in need. I want the most important part of its mission, of the mission of the North Chinese Students Club is to, okay, I can see here, the title of this slide, bring a closer relationship and a better understanding between Americans and Chinese. So here's an example. So this one I want to say is not my creation, but a quote from a statement of the Chinese Student Club at the Cornell College. So beside this one, so the Chinese Student Club at the Greenville College also shared the mission and take into its practice by exhibiting Chinese material culture in 1918, which showcased nearly all classes of Chinese needleworks, robes, scarves, lacework, ornaments, and many examples of carved work, books, literature, and newspaper. Accompanying accommodation of Chinese Guizhen, as I mentioned before, the display of Chinese artifact may further local people's knowledge of China. So here is an example. Very interesting. If you guys go, you may know, Lanchang in Greenville College, what we know Greenville is a small town, there's very few Chinese, even now, there are few Chinese. According to my research, in the yearbook, as early as 1910s, Cornell College has a like a Chinese cultural or Chinese calligraphy club. Most member, but interesting thing, most member in the club are not Chinese American, but so they maybe I want to say their relationship between those Cornell College students passion about Chinese culture and those Chinese students' efforts to introduce Chinese material culture to their classmates, to local audience. So I often talk about Chinese Students Club. Let's talk about one organization. So YMCA, YWCA, they are play a very important role in facilitating Chinese student intervention with local society in Iowa. So here's an example. In 1922, YMCA in Iowa City had all of its Chinese students at the university interned in the home of Iowa City people for Sunday dinner. In the subsequent year, YMCA in the same city arranged a party for Chinese women students on campus. So Pearl Chinese students advertised their home culture by combining Chinese cuisine. The organization provided the Chinese student with a significant American reception. So here's a newspaper article, original source of the quote in Daily Iowa, the campus newspaper. So besides, serving food, almost YMCA and YWCA, they also help Chinese students in arranging their public speech. As I mentioned, public speech was a very important component of Chinese students' campus life in the early 20th century. So here's an example. In 1912, YMCA in our city sponsored a lecture about the history background of a revolution and life of some of leading men in China. A lecture, of course, is hosted by Chinese students. Was delivered by Chinese students. And in the following year, a Chinese student, T.L. Lin, delivered a lecture entitled Chinese Yesterday, Today, and Tomorrow in its weekly meeting in Iowa City. YMCA. So besides the public speech, YMCA also provided infrastructure support for Chinese students' celebration. As I mentioned, the celebration of National Day was very important for Chinese students in our lifetime. So for example, in 1923, the YMCA chapter in Grinnell provides a meeting room for Chinese students' accommodation of the ethnic cuisine to local communities during their National Day celebration. So they are very generous in sponsoring Chinese students' activity and their social life, social activity, yeah. So the last organization I want to briefly talk is called Cosmopolitan Club. Okay, if you Google Cosmopolitan Club now, the first result on Google may be like a private club in your city, like a club for rich people, for very, very rich people. But what I talk here is totally different thing. So Cosmopolitan Club, it's like, you can see here, it's originated in the worldwide peace movement in the late 9th century. And the first Cosmopolitan Club was founded at University of Wisconsin in 1903. So I want to say since then, the network of club promptly extended across the United States, according to historian Ann Chow. In 1907, the Association of Cosmopolitan Club was founded by eight such organizations, and by 1913, there were 30 across the country. So briefly, I want to say Cosmopolitan Club in the history of higher education in the United States, it was among the first, I want to say, international students, not international student only, but international student specific student organization, most member and its leadership consider of international students of different background who come from Peru, come from Japan, come from India, come from China, come from different parts of the world in the early 20th century. So And let's go back to Iowa. So in 1913, this club, the first two chapters in Iowa, established in our city and arms. Since the 1920s, Chinese students have played an important role in the club in Iowa. For example, in 1925, the Chinese member of the club at the Coy College performed Chinese one-actor comedy entitled Li Huangqiang's First Visit to America, which mainly reflect their close cultural encounter in Iowa. 6 years later, Chinese member of the club Elms collaborated with their America's mate to produce and perform a Chinese play, which represent the contact of Chinese students with the Western idea. Moreover, Cosmopolitan Club encouraged Chinese members to take a leadership role within the organization. As I mentioned, at that time, I want to say, Cosmopolitan Club was so distinct because most student organizations like YMCA, YWCA, okay, they are eager to support China, for example, Chinese students' social activity, but it's almost impossible for them to appoint a Chinese student as like a leader of a local chapter of YMCA. In, for example, in Iowa, but Cosmopolitan Club is so different. Most, as mentioned, most of its leadership consists of international students, including Chinese students. So, for example, Connor College student Carol Chung, she served as a secretary treasurer of a Cosmopolitan Club within the college in 1921, and Chinese students even took more important role. In the organization, national leadership. For example, T.L. Lin Ting, he was chosen to be president of Cosmopolitan Club of America and become the first Chinese student to take a leading position in national student organization beside the Chinese student aliens. So that's a milestone achievement made by Chinese student in the history of American higher education. So here's my summary of my second session. So with the assistance from the student and youth organization, Chinese students in Iowa successfully advertise their home culture and attract the local audience notice. All the three organizations provide infrastructural support for Chinese students' cross-cultural communication activity in the strange land. Besides, the transnational, these three organizations, they indeed help Chinese students in doing, for example, serving food, introducing their culture, and introducing the political news, as I mentioned, very important for Chinese students' campus life, Chinese political news to local audience. So they are very important. So let's go back to our slide. So here's my conclusion, very brief conclusion. As you can see here in the title, we were ever here. I want to say it's interesting. The first time I come to US a few years ago, when I come to Iowa, in the orientation session designed for international students, I still remember that. I mean, staff in the National Student Office, they say, okay, they give us like a picture, a diagram, say, okay, everybody knows that's a turning point in the history of, for example, history of Chinese, especially Chinese international student in Iowa. The turning point year is like 2008. After that, we witnessed an increasement of undergraduate Chinese student in Iowa. So before that, most Chinese students, for example, come to US, they were graduate students, they were peer students. But after that, we witnessed an increased number of undergraduate students in Iowa. It's like this trend continue now. But I want to say here, most students I described and talked in my presentation, they were undergraduate students. They were not graduate student, they were college student, they come here for undergraduate degree, for bachelor degree. So let's say what I say, we were ever here. While it's so, I want to say widespread perception of our presence, significant percent of Chinese students in Iowa, in, for example, in Iowa City, people say, okay, like a 2008, maybe a turning point. Before that, we didn't have so much Chinese students, but I want to say, no, we have ever had a large number of Chinese students at that time, and they were very active in opposition to the, I want to say, stereotype perceptions. Okay, Chinese students are, they are certain sense, they are nerdy, they are they study STEAM, they don't care about campus life, they don't want to learn American culture. Some people believe that, I totally understand. But I won't say that's misleading. At least 100 years ago, those Chinese students, they were so active. They reached out to the local community with the help, with the facilitation of the student organization, both YMCA, YWCA, Chinese Students' Own Club, and the Cosmopolitan Club. They were very active. They were very politically active. They were very socially active. They want to not just to learn American culture, they also want to disseminate it, their own culture to local audience in Iowa. Remember, what I say, a long time, there were very few Chinese people, Chinese immigrants in Iowa in the early 20th century. Even there were only one Chinese restaurant, like a Mandarin Inn, across Iowa. But those Chinese students, when they come to US, come to Iowa, they try to broaden their Chinese culture, Chinese culinary culture, try to serve their American friends Chinese food. So they made a big contribution in bridging Iowa and China. So that's what I want to say. It's very important, but most of the people, or even history, I think it's very pity. It's so sad. Like, okay, those book about Chinese immigrants, Chinese nationals, Chinese students in US, they always overlook Iowa. Oh, they just talk of New York. They talk about California. Maybe they talk about in Midwest, they maybe talk about Chicago. Oh, it's so large Chinese population. Maybe talk about St. Louis in Missouri. Oh, they were ever a large Chinatown, but it's removed like three decades ago. But how about Iowa? I want to say Iowa should be taken into account, and into account for the landscape of Chinese American history. But in the meantime, I want to say most people, most audience today, you are not a historian, you are not a Chinese, like Chinese American historian, especially. I want to let most people know, our local Iowa people know, okay, you may think, we have a inflow of Chinese student like after 2008, but I was saying, no, that's not such a new thing. We were ever here long time ago, over 100 years ago. So the presence of Chinese students should be considered as an integral part of Iowan history in early, especially for example, in the early 20th century. Yeah, that's my talk today. Thank you.
Thank you so much for an excellent presentation. We now move to the question and answer portion of our program. Please submit your questions via the chat function at the bottom of your viewing screen. If you have not done so already, feel free to also turn on your video function, but please keep yourself muted. While we are waiting for questions to come in, ICFRC wants to thank its members and donors for their support. If you would like to join ICFRC or make a gift to support its programs, please go to icfrc.org. Thank you. We have our first comment. Thank you so much for this fascinating talk. I learned so much. You noted early in your talk that Chinese students in the early 20th century were eager to discuss politics, unlike their US counterparts. Would you tell us a bit about how this is still true and maybe how things are different today? That is, Chinese politics are very complicated. And in my own research, most Chinese students shared with me, it's not scrolling down there. Most Chinese students shared with me very pro Communist Party views. Some, though, were critical of the Chinese government. What does your own research reveal about students' willingness to discuss the particulars of politics in the Chinese context?
As for a question, because I'm a historian instead of expert or scholar of contemporary Chinese students or Chinese immigrants, so I may answer my answer just about what happened in the past. One thing I want to say, that's a big difference, is that I think I didn't mention in my speech, but according to my research, most Chinese students a long time, they were Christian. And you can mention, you may see that a lot of Chinese students receive not just about their study abroad, but their social activity was supported by church. For example, they deliver lecture to church, to local church. And in terms of a student organization, I recognize the importance of YMCA and YWCA, but we know the full name of YWCA is Young Christian. Young men, male Christian Association, and young women Christian Association. So I want to say that's a bigger background, bigger difference between the intense, composition of Chinese students in the early 20th century and in the early 21st century. A lot of time, most Chinese students that come to US, they were Christian, and they maintain a strong connection with local church. Here's one example. I didn't mention in my speech, but I talk a little bit in my research, is that I can give an example. So I come from Fujian province in China. When I did this research, I found it very tricky. A lot of Chinese students in US, in Iowa, that time, they come from my home province, Fujian. I didn't know why. Why they come from Fujian? Why those such large number or large proportion of Fujianese students wanted to study in US, in Iowa, because I mentioned most students a lot of time, they may prefer to study in, for example, in the East Coast, in New England, instead of the Midwest, like Iowa. My explanation or my answer to the question is that it's because in Fujian, the Methodist Church in Iowa, it's a missionary, they were very active in mission school, Christian education in Fujian at that time. So those missionary, they were teacher in high school and even junior college in Fujian, they recommended their Fujian student to study in some college like Grinnell, like Cornell College, like even Morningside College is sponsored by the Methodist Church. So in terms of why they talk about students' willingness to discuss particulars of politics in Chinese context. I want to say it's very interesting when I did research, I found that, this one maybe sound very tricky and sound very weird, but it's really true. They may prioritize their identity as a Christian instead of Chinese. They talk about when they come to US, it's so many church in China, in US, in Iowa, they feel much more comfortable a lot of time. But I mentioned most Chinese students, at least in Iowa, they were Christian a lot of time. So they feel very comfortable, and they were very talk always in their public speech beside the national crisis. They always talk about our importance of Christianity and the missionary in helping China in the modernization of Chinese society. So that's my answer, maybe.
Thank you. We have another comment and question. Thank you so much for your amazing presentation. I learned so much. My question is, did you find in your research what came of the Chinese international students from the early 20th century? Did they stay in the US or immigrate long-term, aspire for citizenship in the US? Did many take their experiences back to their home cities in China? If you found it in your research, how did their experience in Iowa affect their life trajectories?
Thanks, Senator Elizabeth. Thanks for your question. So for your first question, I want to say most Chinese students a lot of time, after their study in US, they return to China. One reason is that you may know a lot of time, American society is still in the exclusionary era. So this means that they cannot get citizenship. They had to return to China until maybe some of you, most people I think in my research, they finally return to China. And as I mentioned, they come to US as a Christian. They come from mission school. They always come to, after like take education in US, they wanted to return China and work as a missionary. It's true, a lot of them finally become missionary or become an active member in the Christian society, Christian community in China. So for in terms of second question, as mentioned, is exclusion error. So it's almost impossible. Only a few of them may, if they stay US for longer time, after removal of the exclusionary act, they could get citizenship in the late 1940s and the 1950s. So here, in terms of influence of China, of their experience in US and China, I won't say yes, that's very significant influence. Here's an example in my current research, it's a case study, not about Chinese students, so it's a large topic, but a specific college in my hometown, it was very famous in early 20th century in China. It's called Huan'an College. It's a women college. So it's interesting. The founder of the college and the first two presidents of the college, they were Methodist missionary, come from Silk Falls, come from Morningside College. And the maintenance of the college, Huan'an College, is mainly rely on the financial support, donation from local Methodist community in Iowa. So in terms of, and it's college, as I mentioned, a lot, because most teachers, they were Iowa original American missionary, they recommend their female students to study in US. And those students, after their studying, they studying in Morningside College, they study in Cornell College, they return to China, return to my hometown, and they become teacher in the college missionary in the Huan'an College. Those Methodist women, they were very important in, I won't say, in the history of higher education in China. And they, with the efforts of both American Methodist missionary and the teachers, and the Chinese Methodist teacher and the missionary, the college, the women's college, was one of the best women's college in China in the early 20th century. So I want to say that's very important, and they brought a lot of idea, and they received a lot of funding. They hiring a lot of teachers in Iowa, and this kind of, I want to say, continuing even after they finish their study in US, they return to China, work as teachers. They keep just travel back and forth between China and Iowa, and deliver and give speech. When they come to US, come back to US, they visit Iowa again and deliver speech to local audience. And they also brought a lot of idea, American education, and especially women's education, women's higher education back to China. Oh, okay, in terms of exclusion act, I don't think they talked a lot. Once they lay out, maybe because not that time that was sensitive, but at least I was most of my research based on newspaper article, historical newspaper article, yearbooks, campus newspaper, like Daily Iowa, Cornell College's campus newspaper. It didn't talk about this kind of sensitive issue in the public, in public. Oh yeah, this one, I want to say this one is not my bigger project, but my bigger project is a little bit related to this one. It's about deaf culture, you know, deaf people in the United States. I'm sorry, deaf education in China, and its origin in the United States. But this one is just like my one part of my research when I was a master's student in Iowa. I took it, as I mentioned, as a Chinese student. I was wondering what happened. When was the first time Chinese student come to US? Well, a lot of people say, okay, they come to US. A lot of Chinese student come to US after 2008. But as the historian, I also want to trace everything back to its origin. When I say origin, it's like, okay, at least 100 years ago. Everything could maybe trace back to 100 years ago, over 100 years ago. So I'm doing that. Another reason is that, as I mentioned, I'm still treat this research as like my side work research. My personal interest. I'm doing research about, like I mentioned, Hwanan College, because that college is located in my hometown, not the only home province, my hometown, and its connection with Iowa has never been taken seriously by historians. They always say, okay, it's very tricky. People always say, okay, transnational, when you say international, China and the US. But in the case of Hwanan, it's located in my hometown, Fuzhou, and it's Fujian, in a general sense, Fujian province, and Iowa. So I want to say my current research is just say, okay, the connection in terms of exchange of higher education, it's not just transnational, it's also translocal. There's direct connection. Most money, most teacher, most knowledge, most everything in the Hwanan culture come from Iowa, not just from other parts of US. So that's very interesting, because we talk too much about international, but we may overlook importance of local view, local perspective, like Iowa. While people always say, oh, okay, Iowa has, maybe in terms of international history of Iowa, people always talk about, okay, it has strong connection with Germany, or lots of Germany come to Iowa. It has a strong connection with maybe Denmark, with Netherlands, whatever, Holland, whatever. But actually it has a strong connection with China, or even Fujian, translocal or interlocal connection. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much, Shuan, for your excellent presentation. This was ICFRC's 9th program for the spring semester. Our next program next week, Wednesday at noon Central Time via Zoom, features speaker Dr. Darlene Grant. She will speak on Peace Corps volunteer service as a 50-year-old seeking dragons and drinking tea to partner in combating racial stereotypes. Thank you for joining us today. We are adjourned.